I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You've probably been hearing about the concept of a Green New Deal swirling around in the political atmosphere lately. But it's a little bit of a nebulous term, and it's being used in slightly different ways by different people. The most recent action on the concept was the filing of a Green New Deal resolution by freshman New York legislator Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez last month. And a companion resolution on the Senate side was introduced by Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts. But it's actually not an entirely new concept. It's been part of the Green Party's platform for nearly a decade, and others have talked about ways to adopt the framework and philosophy of FDR's New Deal to the modern era, capturing climate change along with economic and social reforms. These resolutions, even if they were to pass, wouldn't actually create any new laws or policies. They would be more of a promise of intent to create laws that would address climate change and economic inequality. But nonetheless, they're spurring lots of national debate and discussion. Today on the show, we're going to look at what's actually in these resolutions and then how Vermont fits into this national debate. But first, what exactly is the Green New Deal? We are joined now by Danielle Kurtzleben, a political reporter for NPR, to help go over the details. Danielle, it's a pleasure to have you on Vermont Edition.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So as I mentioned, this isn't a new concept. It's been part of the Green Party's platform. It was even mentioned earlier. It was a part of President Obama's ideas around how to spur economic reform and deal with climate change. So where did it actually come from?
Well, it's been around for quite a while, like you said. The Green Party had embraced it for a while. Now, as far as it sort of busting through to the mainstream, at least the phrase Green New Deal, columnist Thomas Friedman from The New York Times talked about this during the Obama administration, I believe it was. He, you know, really embraced this idea of, listen, in order to really get over the giant climate hurdles that we have, and they are giant. They are quite big. In order to, you know, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, make sure that we are not raising the global temperature by that, you know, 1 or 2 degrees, what do? Well, we need to overhaul the economy. We need to make it palatable to businesses and to people to really take action on this. So he really sort of helped push it forward to a certain degree back then. And it's sort of been buzzing around in the leftist and the liberal community among progressives for quite some time since then. Now, it is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in particular and some other groups surrounding her, the Justice Democrats, the Sunrise Movement, those sorts of groups that really have pushed this forward even more.
And is she getting all the credit for proposing this resolution because she's sort of the hot new legislator as opposed to Ed Markey, who did the same thing in the Senate, but we're not hearing his name attached to it so much?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, yes, she's definitely doing a lot of the work of really pushing this. As you recall, there was that protest with activists outside of Nancy Pelosi's office that occurred just as this session of Congress was starting. Mm-hmm. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was there. That raised a lot of eyebrows, that created a little bit of strife on the Democratic side of, you know, are there going to be these divisions around policies like this? So she's very much been doing the really heavy pushing of this. But I am glad that you mentioned him in your intro, because, yes, he does get forgotten in this discussion.
Well, and Nancy Pelosi hasn't exactly been embracing this idea. Didn't she call it dismissively like, oh, that green dream or whatever they're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, you're sort of putting it mildly. Yeah, she has been. I mean, she's been polite, as Nancy Pelosi is, but she has said, She has said things to the effect of, we are open to all possibilities. But so she's really framed this as one of as many proposals we might get. So, you know, let a million flowers bloom, bring them all in, and then we will decide what to do about the environment.
Aren't we going to need to have a Green New Deal if we want to have a million flowers blooming in 20 or 30 years? Danielle, it's on the Senate side, though, right, that this resolution might actually get a floor vote, or at least sooner?
Yeah. So Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, has said that they are going to bring this to a vote. We're not sure on the timing of that yet, but he has said, you know, right now what I've seen is it could be this spring, maybe this summer. So it could be relatively soon, actually. But that's not because Mitch McConnell is really into the Green New Deal and really wants it to pass. In part, this seems to be him throwing down the gauntlet and saying, all right, we Republicans believe that this Green New Deal is very extreme. We think that this is much more than the American people want. So, all right, go ahead. Let's vote on it. And, you know, Democrats, especially Democrats from swing states, go ahead and take this very tough vote. Let's see where you land.
He wants them on the record.
Absolutely. That is exactly what he's doing here.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what's actually in these companion resolutions in the House and Senate, because there are several ideas. Again, this is sort of a way of saying this is what we want to move forward toward. These are our goals. It's not like here's the policy that's going to get us there. But what are the goals that are outlined in the Green New Deal?
Right. So I would say they fall into two categories. One is environmental and one is economic. The environmental ones, let's start with. The environmental ones are very, very ambitious, first of all. I mean, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez herself told Morning Edition here a few weeks ago, the goal is to go carbon neutral in 10 years, was her wording. Now, that is a phenomenally steep ask, if you ask a lot of climate scientists. And the question is, how do you get there? Is nuclear a part of that? That's another discussion this raises. So in a lot of ways, the Green New Deal raises a lot of questions of feasibility on some of these goals. But what a lot of the proponents of it would argue is, we need to think big in order to stop the threat of climate change. So a few other of those really lofty goals, for example, removing pollution and greenhouse gases from manufacturing and industry, from farming, while keeping family farms, smart power grids, upgrading all existing buildings and building new ones for maximum energy efficiency, investing in high-speed rail, all of them ideas that, you know, a lot of progressives like, but like some of them turned up to 11. So,
right.
Yeah. And so like, but then it's a lot of lofty ideas all wrapped into one bill. Now, on top of that, you have the economic ideas. And a lot of these economic ideas are, once again, ideas that a lot of progressives like. For example, this bill, the idea is that it would create a lot of new jobs, a lot like the New Deal from the Depression era. But the idea, as this bill says, is the jobs would be high quality union jobs, however they define high quality. But they would be union. They would be higher wage jobs. They would have guaranteed paid vacation, paid leave. Retirement security is the phrase it uses. And there are just a lot of really big, lofty goals that this bill is trying to put forward. The ultimate phrase that is often used around it is environmental justice, is that, yes, we want to improve the environment. We want to make sure that we are doing all of this in a way, though, that lower income, middle income, that everybody is sharing in the gains from it.
And are there any complaints about that you'd lump, you know, paid family leave in with restructuring our transportation grid so that it has no more carbon emissions? I mean, do those things, the argument is they naturally go together because you can't have economic justice without environmental justice and vice versa. But, you know, are those things likely to be teased apart?
I mean, I think that were this to get a serious look in Congress, first of all, you would have a lot of the discussion of this, a lot of how doable it is in the details, right? Like, for example, what does retirement security mean to the people who are pushing this forward? Because as you said, this is non-binding. This is just a list of ideas at this point, or a list of goals. Or what is a family-sustaining wage? Well, that means different things in different parts of the country. So this is a very, very broad piece of legislation, is one major thing to keep in mind. It puts forth at least some, it sort of at least nails down what these progressives want in terms of a Green New Deal, because prior to this, it had just been a phrase. This actually nails it down, but it doesn't nail down a lot. There's still a lot more to get through.
Well, to that point, Corey wrote in to say, it's ridiculous. The cost is beyond what anyone can afford. And Corey adds the hashtag Democrats love debt. Is there a price tag actually attached to these resolutions?
Not that I have seen. I mean, one can imagine that it would be rather large. I mean, if you're talking about promoting high-speed rail, upgrading every building, having a job guarantee, that sort of thing. You can imagine it would be phenomenally expensive. I mean, one question that I think is sort of being batted around Washington right now, that at least some political analysts are looking at, is, okay, is the Green New Deal is it sort of an opening salvo? Is it a, here is where we're starting, maybe we can compromise on some things? I think a thing to look ahead to is, okay, where does the Democratic discussion at least on this go? For, you know, do some of these goals get prioritized over other ones, for example?
Yeah, and can that happen? I mean, in some ways, this is energizing, particularly progressive or left-leaning Democrats. On the other hand, as you mentioned, for moderate Democrats, you know, who may have to go on the record on the Senate side on how they want to vote on this, it could be problematic. So do you think that it's sort of generating that buzz?
I mean, looking at the presidential candidates, I think it is. I mean, I think this is at least gotten people to start talking about what solutions would be, even if they don't think that this is the solution. I mean, for example, the presidential candidates who have talked about this, you have Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, you have Elizabeth Warren, people who are considered at least somewhat more progressive, who have said, yeah, there are some good ideas in here. But you also have Amy Klobuchar, who at least in this group of Democrats who are running for president is considered a bit more moderate. And she has also said, you know, this is at least it's aspirational is, I believe, the word she used. It is a good place to look. It's a good place to start. So I would say, judging by that, yeah, this at least has a conversation going.
So we were talking about some of the things that are included in this idea of a Green New Deal. And one of them is, of course, renewable energy and sort of meeting 100% of our power demand with only renewable energy sources. So we got a note from someone who posts as House Crow, who says, one good thing is the suggestion that we use more nuclear. For years, supposed environmentalists have been demonizing nuclear, with the result that humanity has used more fossil fuels and stored more fossil fuel waste in the atmosphere, thus changing the climate. And goes on with a little bit more on the idea of nuclear and how it might work. But Danielle, interestingly, the actual resolution is silent on nuclear, right? But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has said she doesn't want nuclear to be part of the mix. So I'm not sure where House Crow thinks the suggestion for nuclear is coming, except maybe from House Crow to include it in this idea of a Green New Deal.
Right. I mean, the bill itself, once again, like I said, it's pretty vague on some of these things, but it doesn't specifically say no nuclear, but it doesn't specifically say yes, nuclear will help us get there. But earlier language around the bill, earlier fact sheets and so on, really did try to get rid of nuclear, or at least sort of dial it back quite a bit. So this has been one of the big points of debate around the Green New Deal, is what part will nuclear play? Because there is a very strong school of thought that says you need nuclear in order to get us towards that zero emission place. And so the question is, what exactly, if the Green New Deal, once again, if it were to pass, and if it were to even get a serious debate, I think that would be one of the number one questions, is what part would or would not nuclear play?
So before we let you go, Danielle, I want to bring you one more thought here from Tom in Barnard, who says, what, quote, green energy can produce baseload power? How are we to build a solar panel without petroleum products? Removing fossil fuels from the USA could wipe out our remaining manufacturing. Many solar panels are produced in China, a large producer of CO2 and pollution. A Green New Deal equals a China stimulus bill. What do you think about that?
You know, once again, this, first of all, your caller, your listener, is getting at things that are maybe a little above my pay grade, and maybe more things for an energy reporter. But what I will say is that the Green New Deal also has provisions in it that say we want to counteract manufacturing jobs being shipped overseas. So I wonder if that would also be a part of the discussion. You can, but yes, like your listener is getting at, you can see all of the levers that are being pulled against each other, sort of. On the one hand, yeah, you want more solar panels. On the other hand, you want to produce them here. So you up the U.S. capacity. Okay, so how does the government do that? How does the government incentivize that? There is just, it is hard to overstate here how big and how ambitious this bill is, and how many goals are in it and how absolutely economy changing it would be for the if all of this were to be enacted.
Well, and you're getting us to the point, too, where we were talking about earlier, this idea of combining environmental changes and big, large-scale environmental policy with economic policy and that question
right.
about making jobs and making sure that they're sustainable. So perhaps trying to get to that question of doing all this work but not making it a boon for someone else and a real detriment to the manufacturing people who work in manufacturing in the U.S.
Absolutely. And that gets at a very basic progressive, a very basic, maybe you could even say center progressive, a goal of or idea of, listen, we want to boost the economy, but we want all of those gains to be shared relatively equally or at least shared equitably among people. And we don't want all of the gains to just go to the owners of the businesses. We want it to go to the workers as well. So that is definitely an idea that's at the heart of the Green New Deal. And it's an idea that's easy to miss in all of the discussion of just the environmental goals. The economic goals of the Green New Deal are also very fundamental to it.
That's Danielle Kurtzleben, political reporter for NPR. We have links to some of her reporting on this at our website, vpr.org. Danielle, thank you so much. What a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, thank you.
We are talking about the so-called Green New Deal that's been floated to address both economic inequality and environmental policies. A lot of the concepts in this set of proposals sound familiar to Vermonters, and though they are unlikely to be written into federal law anytime soon, the way things stand in Washington, they are spurring debate, and they could be just sort of an opening salvo in how to move the country forward or in a slightly different direction when it comes to both issues, both economic inequality and addressing climate change. So let's turn our focus to Vermont and how we fit into that debate by virtue of both our culture and our policies. Joining me is Richard Watts, director of the Center for Research on Vermont at UVM. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you, Jane. Pleasure to be here.
So we're talking here about this idea, you know, this big debate in the national political sphere now. And what is a Green New Deal? And could we do it? And could we do it in 10 years? Could we even do it maybe in 40 years? This is these ideas around both how we address systemic inequality and how we address climate change are ones that Vermont has been having. So does this feel like a new debate for Vermont or being part of a new debate at the national level at least? Does it feel different or is it like, oh, yeah, we've been doing that for years?
I think it's really important to think big and to lift your eyes to this horizon and to have these grand visions. As a planner once said, make no little plans. They have no magic. And this idea or concept helps us do that because these are big problems and it's going to take big solutions. And I really like the way it's framed as including, as you were discussing with your guest, all of these various aspects. So we connect energy, we connect environment, we connect social justice, we connect public health, clean water. All of that becomes part of this conversation.
And it seems like from what we know about the projections for climate change, that question about economic justice is going to become crucial because there will be more winners and losers in our landscape once we're experiencing more of the effects of climate change. So it makes sense to you to combine those things or to tie economic inequality with climate change policy?
Absolutely, because the people who are going to be most affected, of course, are the people who are on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. We know that, not just here in this country, but around the world. And we are making some steps in this direction in Vermont. In Vermont, as you said, it was nice you said culture as well as our policies, because there are things about Vermont that allow us to have these kinds of conversations. There's a scale. We always rank very high as far as our social capital, which is connected to how we're connected to each other. And yesterday was town meeting, and I got to drive around to a bunch of town meetings, and there's still this real tradition of having a conversation, of disagreeing with your neighbors, but being able to do it in a civil way. Those are things that we have that will help us tackle these really big problems that are outlined in this concept of a Green New Deal.
or the Green Dream, as right. Nancy Pelosi called it. And in a moment, I want to talk, Richard, about that comment you just made where you included, I drove around yesterday, because that's going to be a big one for Vermont if something like this passes. But first, let's hear from Bob, who's calling in from Rutland City. Hi, Bob. What's your perspective?
Well, thank you. Yes, I can say it's good to get the discussion started about green, because everybody's got a different definition of what green is. whether it be economics or, like your guest just said, cultural or environmental energy. Like I know Vermont made the choice a few years back, just a few years back, to not include the Vermont Yankee in nuclear because uranium, just like oil, is a non-renewable, you know, it's a finite resource. So that's a good thing to get this discussion going, is what the definition is of green.
Mm. And Bob, do you have one in your head? When you hear green, do you know what that means?
No, and I'll be honest, that do you think about that? That really takes a real thought. You can't just have a snap judgment. You only need to think about it, I think.
Yeah, Bob, thanks for raising that question. Richard Watts, what do you think?
And it reminds me of two other things that are interesting about this. That is, it's cross-discipline, so it's not just taking one or another issue. It's trying to connect them all, and I think in Vermont we can do that well, and we are doing. So to get to what Bob's talking about, there are some things that we are already doing in these areas. For example, we lead the nation or come close to leading the nation in a number of clean energy jobs. Something like 19,000 jobs or 5 or 6% of our workforce are involved in all aspects of this, from weatherization to installing solar panels. We also have been really great on the healthcare. So here are two very different issues, but we've been one of the states with the lowest amount of uninsured people. We've done well on trying to make efforts on clean water. One of the things that's in this proposal is about reducing our waste. We have this law in Vermont, Act 248, where we're trying to move in those directions. So big challenges, but there are some steps that this state has already been taking in these directions.
But there are a lot of steps that even if the state is taking, we either can't do on our own or, you know, are a drop in the bucket. And so this federal or national conversation is one that I imagine many Vermonters welcome, because there's only so much the state can do when it comes to all of these policies, when it comes to everything that impacts the state that comes from outside the state or that we send out, or the things that are just sort of that don't follow state borders. And so having this national conversation is one I think that Vermont potentially would really like to be a part of, if not only just to push, you know, what we've been doing out there in other places.
Exactly. And there is a leadership role that Vermont can have because of our scale, our ability to talk to each other. I was just at a meeting this morning where the transportation, housing, and public health. So here's three very different types of ways of thinking about things, but all of them are coming together because those issues are so related as we think about this big vision of a Green New Deal.
Let's go to Rick calling in from East Montpelier. Hi, Rick.
Hi, yes. Great discussion. Thank you both. I just wanted to address the cost a little bit, because somebody said, oh, how much is it going to cost? Well, we cannot afford not to be thinking about this and developing the plans that are going to deal with this. And I like to think of the Green New Deal as something that will integrate, you know, from local to state to national to even global, all the various things that come together to build a green economy that does have economic justice at its heart. Let's think of when we built out the interstate system. That cost a huge amount of money back then. But what did it return in terms of, it was an investment. It was not an expense. And it returned many times the amount of economic benefits than what it cost.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for that perspective on how to think about cost. And let's get another one in here from Donna in South Burlington. Donna, you want to share your thoughts with us?
Yeah, it's kind of the flip side of what the previous caller just said. Because, you know, I've been doing efficiency work for 30 years now, and the first question that people in Vermont and most places in the United States ask is it cost effective? And There's really a big hurdle to cross to get people to pay for future benefits that they can't see, that aren't, like, you know, they don't see it right away. So that's probably human nature. And the other piece that, I mean, I do lighting work, and there's a tremendous resistance in Vermont and other places to technologies that look or feel different, and lots of fear around something that's new. So I think those are going to be hurdles that have to be very seriously considered.
Yeah, Donna, thanks for sharing that. We are not very good at looking at long-term gain if it's going to cause short-term pain. I mean, that's something that we all know about the human nature. So how does that factor into these conversations about looking forward 50, 60, 70 years at what things might cost if we don't take action versus what it's actually going to cost now and what that price tag looks like and how different politicians, depending on their viewpoint, can use that question of price and price tag to push forward an agenda on either side.
Well, one example of that really resonates in this conversation. So somewhere in the 60s, Amory Lovins came up with this concept of the negawatt. That is the cheapest, cleanest, greenest amount of electricity is the one not used. And it took quite a while for that to kind of reach out and become law. But Vermont, in Efficiency Vermont, was one of the first, really the first statewide utility to embrace that concept. And today, the cheapest, greenest, cleanest unit of electricity is the one we don't use, and Efficiency Vermont and others are able to document that in detail. And I think we should take those concepts and apply it to transportation and other places where we do this kind of broad-scale look and figure out what is the cheapest, greenest, cleanest way to get there, and that may help move this conversation along.
Well, transportation is an interesting one because, of course, in Vermont, that's been a real hurdle for us and remains a real hurdle in meeting both our energy standards and just in thinking about how to be a state with more efficiency and how to do things like drive less. Because, you know, when you just look at not only the geography of our state, but the way our economy is set up, you know, the way housing prices are, that for a lot of people, buying a house means buying a house farther away than they'd like to be from where they work because it's cheaper, you know, out than it is close in to where the centers of business might be. And we have this this culture and this geographical structure where we drive a lot. My car is dying, so I need to buy a new car. And I've been thinking about this. And, you know, I can't afford a new car. I'm looking at a well-used car. And there are not a lot of well-used four-wheel drive cars that, you know, are plug-in hybrids. And so we're not even at the point yet where that sort of trickle-down of the most efficient new models have hit the majority of, you know, cost-conscious Vermonters. So how do we address something like the transportation grid?
So this is exactly where the Green New Deal helps us lift our eyes a little bit to a bigger horizon. And part of the problem is that we have different funding mechanisms for different things. And what was different in the example I just gave about Efficiency Vermont is there was a funding way through the electric bill for us to actually use that money to pay people to get light bulbs or to make more efficient motors. So there's a way to do that. We don't really have a way to do that in transportation, but I think we could apply the sort of same big thinking that this proposal is asking us to do and take all the transportation impacts and put it together and then think, what is the least cost, most environmental way? And there's a similar concept to the negawatt. We could call it the negamile. The cheapest, greenest, cleanest mile is the one not driven in a vehicle. Now, for Jane, it may not always work, but it could be that the same programs that worked on the efficiency side, like to subsidize light bulbs or motors, could help you buy that cheap, green, you know, electric car, whatever it is for your trips, or make it easier for you occasionally to use transit or to reduce a couple of your trips. We know in Vermont almost a quarter of the trips, that is anytime we go anywhere for a purpose, is less than a mile. So some of those could be by foot or by bike. Again, it's taking that big picture that I think this program is suggesting that we think about.
Well, and that I think is a good distinction because what you're not suggesting, Richard, that, you know, it's not the nitty-gritty. It's having a big idea to work from. And that sounds like that's what's most appealing to you about this concept is saying, yeah, we'll get to all of that stuff about exactly how much the incentives are going to be for this sector or that sector. But the idea is, what's our big goal? And then we figure out how to get there. But if we don't have a big goal, if we don't have the thing that we know we're heading toward, it's hard to make those policies and to figure out the right balance of costs and where to push without knowing what it is we're pushing for. Do I have your perspective right?
Exactly. And what we're going to see play out over here in the next year or two is a framing battle. It'll be a battle by advocates to kind of lift this up to this big conversation. And there's money in the system somewhere. We just have to figure it out. Versus opponents who are going to cast this as socialism or big government or overreach. And that debate is going to play out in the media, and there's going to be this contest, and we'll see if we're able to kind of keep our eyes on the big vision or if we get stuck in why it can't be done.
We got a note from MB who says, it sounds like you're picking all the critical voices in your comments. Of course there is much to work in the Green New Deal. But the question that any critic or supporter has to answer is, what's your plan to address the climate crisis at the pace and scale required? If you want to criticize the Green New Deal, you have to have an answer and commit to making it happen. And MB, I take your point, and I'm interested to hear that, you know, your reaction is to what you hear as the negative side of this. And I haven't been picking the comments. Those are actually, we had read all of the comments that came in, so you can see this sort of broad scope of people first saying, that's impossible, and then others saying, it's not impossible. If you think it's impossible, what's your plan? You know, here's a roadmap or here's a direction. And so, as you said, Richard, that question of framing and how we frame it is going to really impact what decisions we decide to make on things like this. Let's go to Carrie, who's calling in from Marshfield. Hey, Carrie, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hi, Sven. I wanted to comment just because this is a couple times now on point, and now today I've heard various people talk about funding the Green New Deal in the same way that the interstates were funded. And it's simply a poor comparison because the interstates were funded with a one-time gas tax hike that people who drive, all the citizens agreed to because it was a one-time temporary hike, which raised all the funds to put in the interstate system. But all the maintenance and repair from there is on the state and local communities. It's not federally funded. And so that's my comment.
Yeah, Carrie, interesting to hear you say that. And again, you know, the funding source is one, and there will be many funding sources no matter what we do. But if something like the Green New Deal were to go forward, yeah, it's those questions about where do we pull those funding sources from and what are they? And, you know, Carrie is saying, here's this one-time infusion. And we saw that in 2008 as well. We saw with the ERA funds, this sort of one-time infusion of federal funding to help bolster and boost the economy and boost funds. And something like the Green New Deal would require a lot more funding and a lot more sources and a lot of it ongoing combination of federal and state and, you know, private sources. So, Richard Watts, from your perspective, as we move forward in this conversation, we were talking earlier with Daniel Kurtzleben, who was saying, yeah, it may come to a floor vote in the Senate. It's not likely, even if the resolutions passed, which people think are kind of unlikely right now. Those are not bills. So do you see this actually having momentum and progressing? I mean, do you see this as the opening start of a conversation, the opening shove in a direction? Or is this going to be a conversation that dies a death and a year from now we've forgotten it?
I don't think so. I actually think that people want a big vision. We want to think, we know these are big problems. And this idea of connecting all these communities. I mean, we've done this in Vermont in multiple ways. We have affordable housing and land conservation in a, you know, a famous work together. So connecting these communities, addressing the central issues, raising social justice and equity in the same conversation as energy and environment is essential.
Richard Watts is director of the Center for Research on Vermont. It's at UVM. Thank you very much for being part of this conversation. And we've gotten more comments. You can carry them on. We got one from Greg who says, no Green New Deal is complete without a comprehensive plan to restore our degraded wildlands. This means corridor protection, protecting habitat, and reforesting cleared areas. No environmental restoration program is legitimate without reintroducing native predators. So lots of people already thinking about what a Green New Deal might be and might include. You can share your thoughts and your vision with us again at vpr.org. Just click on Vermont Edition.